Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. I hope you are well. I am here with my good buddy, Jason Burke. And over the weekend, I was actually trying to do a little homework myself because I know the gold price is kind of down. It's unloved. And that's when I like to put it on a watch list. So I kind of did some Google research, said, I wonder if there's some good gold miners that are paying a decent dividend right now. And the first person that I reached out to through direct message on Twitter was my good buddy, Jason. So I said, man, if you would do me a huge favor and come on the Rebel Capitalist channel on Monday and discuss this live with my viewers so they can ask you some direct questions, that would be amazing. And he said, sure, George, let's do it. So he is right here. So Jason, thanks for coming on live, buddy. The first thing I wanted to do is go over the price of gold, kind of get your thoughts, and then go over some of those miners that are paying dividends, get your thoughts there, but then have you maybe expand onto some of the other companies in the gold space that you might like even better. So we'll help our viewers make some really good financial decisions here. So first of all, we've got the price of gold. Can you see this chart, Jason?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we know what happened during the Cerveza sickness right here. The price of gold always tanks because the hedge funds are basically selling anything on their portfolio that's liquid. And then after that, the Fed this is a repeat of Lehman Brothers, really. Then the Fed comes in and says, okay, we'll print all this money. The government says we'll spend all this money. And then the price of gold goes way up. But now since then, it's not just flatlined, but it's really gone down from, call it a little over 2,000 to... was this less than 1800? I guess we're at 1778 today. So what are your thoughts on the recent price action of gold?
Okay, so basically gold and silver and the mining stocks have been in a mini bear market. It's been very painful, but I would say it's a mini bear market since really September 2020. Gold, silver, and the gold stocks outperformed pretty much everything in from March of 2020 to about September of 2020. You had enormous outperformance. During that time, the mining companies, so historically for your listeners who are not familiar, in general, mining is a really difficult, it's a bad business because of profit margins and capital expenditures, because this, because there's so many input costs and the miners, a lot of these costs are not fixed. A lot of them are variable costs. So labor, energy, capital cost, materials cost, all these variables. And the miners normally do not have a lot of free cash flow throughout all parts of the cycle with fluctuating commodity prices and their profit margins going crazy. They don't have enough upfront capital to lock in, say, an oil hedge. So when the oil price was down, you know, when the oil price went negative temporarily and it was down in the high 20s, low 30s, a smart mining company like Newmont Mining that had better profit margins and lower costs, they had a lot of free cash flow back then. So about 20 months ago, they had the free cash flow for a while to lock in their oil costs, lock in their diesel costs for 6, 12, 18 months in advance. But that's not something that they can do for forever. And as costs keep rising, the mining company's profit margins erode. And so the other fundamentals for gold and silver, though, that we're seeing, and this is unfortunately not affected in the paper prices right now, is the demand drivers for gold and silver. The main demand driver for gold right now is net central bank purchases. We have very big net central bank purchases that are at 2019 or higher levels that have started to increase a lot again, but that has not affected the paper price in US dollars yet. So you're seeing pre-announcements from like Russia announcing that they're going to buy $7 billion worth of physical gold on the open market. They're going to do it with their trade surplus reserves instead of buying US treasuries. You have Singapore, which bought, I think, a good amount of physical gold reserves. I think they increased it by 25%, give or take. So they back over the summer, and that announcement just came out. So they delayed the results because they didn't want to affect the price. And you have other governments like Brazil and others and Thailand that have bought physical gold. This is their first purchase in over two decades. So you have big, big tonnage orders. It has not affected the paper price yet. And the other major driver of physical gold and silver, and also from what I'm hearing, platinum lately, is Chinese demand. So these are private sector Chinese investment, not the Chinese government. The policies in China that started earlier this year, you have a lot of financial problems in China, with the real estate developers, this is going to be kind of a slow motion train wreck. Right. So like Evergrande has done a bunch of different, I would call it Ponzi finance schemes. So like pyramid schemes, pre-sale scams, a bunch of different financing scams that people have been aware of for years, but they've managed to delay their bankruptcy for years. And a lot of these other Chinese real estate developers have copied them. The question is, the People's Bank of China and the Chinese government, are they actually going to print all the money? Well, the Chinese people, there are a lot of Chinese businesses that are still doing fairly well, even with high stagflation there on food and energy. And there's really bad stagflation there with food and energy, also in other countries too. But in China, it's especially bad with food and energy.
I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I want to look at this chart. I know it's gone down, like we said earlier, from about 2000 down to 1800. As far as the price drop in percentage terms, have we seen a similar drop in the miners, or have they dropped even further?
Way further. I'm good friends with a gold company CEO. The company is worth over $1 billion. I've been friends with him for over a decade, and he just had a long conversation with a longtime investment banker that specializes in raising mining company equity. So he's done leverage buyouts, mergers and acquisitions, this investment banker. And what the investment banker told my friend was straight up, like, the last month, it is becoming near impossible now for gold mining companies to raise significant amounts of equity capital.
See, I love that. That's music to my ears.
So for a contrarian indicator standpoint, this is good. This is the valuations of a lot of mining companies are super low. They've been low for a while though. I wrote an article for patrons about a month ago. It was a general global macro article talking about how nothing is really cheap anymore, especially in the US for asset prices. And the only thing that was cheap at the time about a month ago, and I was telling people that they should start taking gains off the table for technology stocks, some of their crypto. This was a month ago because of all the meme stocks going out of control. I was having family members that don't have any financial background ask me about like trading NFTs, trading altcoins and NFTs. Like a family member is like,
I get the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So just like crazy amounts of speculative behavior, tons of people seemingly making easy profits, trading stocks, stock options, cryptocurrencies, altcoins, NFTs on their smartphones. This was just getting ridiculous to me that like, can valuations continue to get this frothy, especially with what we're seeing with the Federal Reserve Bank, with the scandals, them selling the stock, them announcing that they want to reduce the liquidity punch bowl. So the valuations on the gold stocks, but I didn't bring up the major point there for the demand driver for gold is that I've done videos on this on my YouTube channel for free. There's just a demand explosion, George, for physical gold out of China. A lot of the data points, and this is because of Chinese government policies, they put a cryptocurrency ban for Bitcoin and the altcoins for regular Chinese people. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a Chinese billionaire, or if you're not a Chinese Communist Party like elite, like higher up, you're looking at prison time or worse, asset confiscation, other enormous problems there. You're losing your freedom, basically losing your assets, losing your freedom if you get caught with crypto in China now. With the crypto ban. So I'm sure there are ways around this, because there's been tons of people smuggling their savings for years, paying a fee to launder money out of China. Regular people do it to invest in real estate in other countries. But this is creating so that the inability, because now it's illegal to buy crypto in China, that investment capital is going into gold, is going into silver. There are videos from a Hong Kong analyst with Willem Middlekoop's Commodities Discovery Fund out of Hong Kong. The guy's name is Samson Lee. He posts these videos on Twitter from his friends in mainland China. He's out of Hong Kong. And there's tons of long lines of people buying lots of physical gold in China. So coins, bars, gold jewelry. Gold jewelry demand in China is actually up more than investment demand. So investment demand is up like 48% in the last year out of China. And jewelry demand's up 54%. For gold jewelry. So you're having big spikes. You're having big silver starting to, from what I'm hearing from contacts too in China, silver demand starting to pick up for physical silver. So is platinum.
Okay. So on that note, let's go over to just this basic list here of 7 dividend paying stocks. I just pulled this up on Google the other day. I'd just like to get your take on all seven of these, and then I'm sure you can expand just quickly.
Sure.
And then you can expand to some other companies in the gold space that I think you like even more, and you can tell us why. So first name here is it Agnico Eagle Mines?
Yep.
What do you think of them?
They did a really good acquisition of Kirkland Lake Gold, and they have one of the top CEOs in the industry now. If you're a Kirkland Lake Gold shareholder, there was a merger. You're not going to be happy about this.
Okay, because they're on the list as well. Can you see the list?
That merger went through, so I'm not sure why they're still on the list. It was approved. I don't know if they've been delisted then. I thought the shareholder approval, it was already approved. I'm not sure that I don't know if Kirkland Lake Gold's still trading right now. I thought the merger already went through a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Anyway, though, Alamos. So Agnico Eagle has a lot of high grade, low cost mines in geopolitically safe areas. They just added, with the Kirkland Lake Gold merger, they just added the Fosterville mine. So the Fosterville mine, in terms of project economics and grade right now, now we'll see what happens if the reserves get expanded, if there's exploration upside. I'm just talking on the current reserves that are listed. They have the top grades and the top reserves. Now, 5 years from now, that might change, but right now, that's the case. The Australian government, though, a couple years ago, they increased the royalty, and this is a theme that you're seeing now across the board. And why a lot of gold mining stocks for the long term, if you're going to buy and hold something and not check on it for a mining stock, is dangerous, because a mining company is, depending upon where the mines are located, and especially now in this climate, the politicians, the bureaucrats are raising taxes like crazy across the board on mining companies. And it doesn't matter if it's Australia or South America or Turkey or other countries.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you more worried as of the last year and a half, as based on what's going on in Australia and Canada, if the mines are located there?
So what has been happening, and what I've been telling my patrons, Newmont Mining, in terms of their economics, so if you don't care about vax or anti-vax, so it's kind of the similar principle to investing in tobacco companies or sin stocks. So the CEO for Newmont over the last couple months has issued directives that all Newmont employees have to be vaxxed. So you've been seeing tweets from Newmont employees saying that they are quitting or retiring because they don't want to get vaxxed. So you've seen that's been going around Twitter now for over a month. If you don't care about that and you just look at the low costs of Newmont, the dividend, they are claiming right now that their dividend is sustainable through $1,200 an ounce, $1,300 an ounce gold. That's going to be put to the test, though, because over the last couple quarters, their costs have really started to rise. There's been Bloomberg articles on this, and I've talked about this more for audio podcasts and other articles for patrons. But the costs really, George, are up for the mining industry. I would say in general, double digits. It depends on the mining company. And if the mining company locked in oil and energy hedges, they can keep their oil costs and their diesel costs fairly lower for a little bit longer. But you have all these input costs rising across the board. So you have labor costs. So in a lot of these countries, there's mining unions, and the mining unions pretty much all the time in a lot of these countries ask for higher wages. You have politicians and bureaucrats in a lot of these countries. Whenever the government finances get in trouble, and look what's happening with the pandemic, right? A lot of these governments are just printing money and the central banks are monetizing debt. Well, a mining company, if the mine is there, they can't move the mine. So a mining company has limited options about what it can do. The mining company, if there's geopolitical risk in a certain country, and we saw this years ago in South Africa, where a large gold company, gold miner like Anglo Gold Ashanti, that was predominantly in South Africa, they sold all their mines. So they saw that the policies that were coming down with the mining unions always demanding higher wages, the South African government raising taxes on the mining companies and potentially talking about confiscating the mines and nationalizing them. They just said, screw this. This is too much of a headache. Our costs are rising. We can't predict how much our costs with taxes and labor costs and all these other costs are going to go up. Our profit margins are destroyed. We're just going to sell these mines now, and we're going to go buy assets, other mines, or develop new mines in other countries and try to diversify our mining portfolio into other countries. The problem now, George, is you're seeing this across the board.
Right.
with a lot of mining companies. So this is a fluid situation where right now, certain countries, like I would say for right now, Canada is still, for the most part, very safe, where a lot of these provinces are not going crazy taxing mining companies. But that could change a couple months from now, 6 months from now, 12 months from now. It could change very rapidly.
Yeah. Okay. So how about Alamos?
Alamos Gold has a really low cost producing gold mine in Canada called Young-Davidson. I thought it would be a takeover target. It has not, because the company has not. I would not be surprised if a lot of other larger mining companies have went to Alamos and tried to buy that specific producing mine from them and overpay. Alamos has other potentially good mines in other countries. They have one in Mexico, but Mexico lately is becoming, I would say, more geopolitically unfriendly, depending upon who you ask. Okay. So there's a lot, there's tax issues with the Mexican government claiming that some mining companies haven't paid enough in taxes, saying that they owe years of back taxes. There's environmental permits being pulled for mining companies like the Fortuna Silver, which owns the San Jose mine in Mexico. They've been mining that silver mine, George, for years, and their environmental permit was just pulled. So, So these are games. Other gold company people I've talked to said that specific towns and provinces in Mexico are so corrupt and so cartel controlled with crime and violence and corruption and bribes that it's too much of a headache to invest in certain provinces in Mexico now. So Mexico, until very, very recently, for the last like 15 or 20 years, Mexico was one of the safest countries for a mining company to invest in. And it appears that that is changing drastically. This is good long term. I wrote an article on this for patrons. This is good long term, though, for silver investors, because the main sources of annual silver supply are in Peru and Mexico. Those were the and also byproduct silver in Chile. And those three countries, especially recently, are all becoming mining unfriendly. So there will be less investment into new mine supply there. And this will cause supply problems in the future and cause a much higher price floor for silver. So I'm estimating that the new price floor for silver in the next 3 to 5 years is going to be at least $35.
Yeah. But then you got to own the physical, or you got to make sure you own the miners that are outside of those crazy jurisdictions.
Correct. There's a Canadian silver play right now that I think is super safe. It's Alexco. So they're a primary silver miner. They had a silver mine many years ago, and because the silver price is getting so low, they put the mine on care and maintenance, and they're just restarting the silver mine now. So that would be a safer silver play right now. But again, the laws in Canada, the tax laws could change. But for now, Alexco is solely in Canada.
Okay, how about Barrick?
I have never liked Barrick Gold. there's a reason for this. The main reason, and I've written an article on this, a couple articles on this over the years, is because they admitted in federal court that they were involved in paper price manipulation for a long time.
Oh, wow.
So if you look at solely the economics of Barrick, of their costs, Barrick looks like a solid gold miner, but they always have problems controlling their costs. Management teams at Barrick have a historically bad problem with acquisitions, doing really dumb acquisitions. So they wrote off, George, over $10 billion in bad deals. Yes, they have a new management team now, but when you're as big as Barrick Gold, it becomes difficult to do smart deals. Management becomes tempted to do bad acquisitions. So during the last gold bull market, they did an insane amount of bad acquisitions. So on paper, Barrick looks gold. If you're on Seeking Alpha, and I'm probably going to get emails about this, if you read articles on Seeking Alpha, they're going to recommend Barrick Gold. Most large fund managers, so if you're an institutional investor or global macro hedge fund manager, you're probably going to buy like either the GLD or the GDX, which is a gold mining stock ETF. That's not the gold mining stock ETF I like, but it's the largest and most liquid one. Or you're going to buy shares of Barrick Gold. I don't like any of those.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. What about the next one, Franco Nevada?
So for the larger gold miners, Newmont Mining is safer than Barrick Gold, and so is Agnico Eagle. I prefer those for the larger gold miners, for the regular gold miners.
Okay. So you like those better than Franco Nevada?
No. I like those better than Barrick. Sorry. Okay. Franco Nevada is the safest gold company on the planet. They are, but they don't mine. They don't do any gold mining. So they're that royalty and streaming company I told you about. They were the first one. They've been around since the 1970s. Pierre Lassonde started that, the famous billionaire investor. So he started the royalty model for mining.
So do you want, actually, before we get there, is Yamana, are they in the same category? Are they a gold miner?
Yes, Yamana is a solid.
Then we'll go back to the other business model.
Yamana is a solid mid-tier miner. They have a 50% share of a very low-cost mine, gold and copper mine in Canada. And then they have a good silver mine, the Cerro Moro silver and gold mine in Argentina that has really high grade and a lot of reserves. Sandstorm Gold has a very big silver stream on that, though, too. They're a royalty and streaming company.
Okay, so now do you want to outline that model?
Okay, so for your listeners who are not familiar, and I get questions like this all the time, they ask, what's the difference between a gold mining company and a royalty and streaming company? A royalty and streaming company does not mine. So they're basically a passive investor. Right. So they kind of are doing something similar to venture capital angel investing, where they have a bunch of capital. Hopefully they already have some royalties and streams online. If not, they either have to raise capital or do share dilution to get capital to start making investments. But then the magic starts happening once they start having cash flow. So unlike a regular mining company, and a mining company's profit margins are tough to predict because their costs fluctuate so much. Whereas a royalty and streaming company, throughout all parts of the cycle, a royalty and streaming company, because they don't mine, because they don't have to worry about oil and energy costs, they don't have to worry about labor costs, a mining union going on strike, they don't have to, unless they're making an investment of trying to buy a large stream into a new mine that's going to be built, they don't really have to worry about the inflation that's occurring in base metal prices, how now the cost to build a new mine is going to cost like 30 to 60% more than it did 18 to 20 months ago. There might be a one-time CapEx payment that might be more, but in general, they don't have to worry about all these costs fluctuating every single quarter. So they basically just collect, you're a real estate investor. So it's actually similar to that. You collect your rental checks, right? So you pay your property taxes, you pay your mortgage payments, right? And everything after that's free cash flow. So that's your free cash flow, right? So you're not worried, your real estate investments, you don't worry about price to earnings ratio, right? You worry about your cash flow.
Yeah, right. Correct.
And that is exactly how a royalty and streaming company works. So when I get questions from people about royalty and streaming companies, the first thing they do is they look at the price to earnings ratio of a Newmont Mining, which is the largest royalty and streaming company. They have over 200 royalties and streams online.
With huge margins too, by the way. Huge.
Yes. Enormous profit margins. Enormous. So there's like six or seven of these larger companies. And basically, if you don't want to do a lot of extra due diligence, you can either just buy six or seven of these when they go on sale, when they're cheap. And I don't look at price to earnings ratio for when they're cheap. I look at a cash flow multiple. These companies are valued, and these companies will be, some of them, the smaller and medium sized ones might be acquired if their cash flow multiples are cheap. So their operating cash flow multiple, their free cash flow multiple, or their net asset value multiple, which is it's a discount on their future cash flows.
Okay.
In NAV.
Okay. So that, and I know you like them a lot. So that makes a lot of sense.
Franco Nevada has 200 of these over 200 of these royalties and streams cash flowing. So every single month they have tens of millions of dollars. I think it's over $20 million every single month coming in cash flow to invest. So either if they think their stock is cheap, George, they can either buy back their stock with free cash flow. They don't have to use debt. They can increase dividends, or they can invest in growth, and they have enough cash flow coming in to do all three if they want.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas a regular mining company does not have this unless metals prices are high and costs are low. So the regular gold mining companies had a enormous tailwind for the last 20 months, but now that's not really the case because, as I said earlier in this call, that the costs are up double digits for gold mining. So you have a lot of gold miners, their costs are now up like 20% over the last 18 to 20 months, and they're still rising with all these variable input costs that are still rising. The royalty and streaming companies don't have to worry about that. Their costs are fixed.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not telling anyone to go out and buy these things, but what I am saying, guys, is I like the price of gold. I like the psychology behind gold right now, because you turn on CNBC and everyone is saying gold is dead. And that's when I get very interested, is when they start. They did the same thing as uranium. Remember that, Jason? And so I'm not saying I'm buying right now, but I'm definitely interested, definitely starting to put together a watch list. So guys, we're going to get in some calls here, Jason, but before we do, I want to encourage everyone to check out Jason's Patreon. It's www.patreon.com/joinwallstreetformainstreet. I guess, and then it's support. I think if you just have that much information, they can find it, because what Jason is talking about here, he talks about it on his Patreon page constantly. And obviously he's an expert in this field, not just with gold and gold miners, but all commodities, oil, uranium. I mean, this is kind of like a no-brainer subscription if you're someone that's interested in the precious metals or commodities. So do you have one other thing to add, Jason, before we get into some calls?
Well, I also have almost 2,000 free YouTube videos. I've been doing this over a decade.
Yeah. And by the way, when I first got into macro, when I retired in 2012, Jason's podcast was one of the ones that I listened to religiously back then. And it was, maybe that was 13, 14. It was right around there. I forgot when you you used to do that all the time. But anyway, I don't want to go down that path. But yeah, so Jason's been
that was grueling. That was like 4 to 8 hours a day working for free. That was bootstrapping, working other part-time jobs, building up my business on the side. It was grueling. I was working over 80 hours.
That's how I found out about you. If you wouldn't have done that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know what I mean? I mean, it definitely paid off in the long run. But the bottom line is, you have more experience in these areas than probably anyone on FinTwit. So again, if you're interested in commodities or precious metals, you got to check out Jason's Patreon page.
I would also say I have a lot of integrity in the gold space, because there's a lot of shadiness with a lot of junior mining companies and financing them. I won't name any names, but unfortunately there's a lot of people that take money to pump and dump junior mining stocks out of Vancouver. It's really sad. I was offered, I won't name names, but like, over the summer, I was getting emails offering me like $5,000 to do a 45-minute interview with a junior mining company CEO to help promote the stock, and I turned it down, which is more money than I make now in a month.
Well, we need to change that, buddy, because the value you give is 100 times that. So anyway, let's get into a couple calls here. Caleb, you're on the line with my good buddy, Jason Burek. You have a question for Jason?
Hey, Jason. So my question is that you're seeing the demand for gold go up amongst China, Russia, and other central banks, but you're seeing supply go down from, let's say, silver. So how do you see this working out as far as this mismatch between supply and demand?
This will take time, but over the next 3 to 5 years, there's going to be new price floors. The mining companies have basically decided, especially the larger gold miners, that it is way, way cheaper. And look at what Agnico Eagle just did and some of the other larger companies. It's a buyer's market. They can buy producing gold mines or silver mines. The management teams at a lot of these smaller miners are giving up. They're willing to sell the assets for pennies on the dollar and screw over their shareholders. So you're going to see that work out. It's going to be very frustrating. So, but the larger companies like Agnico Eagle and some of those others are going to benefit. But this can't last that long, because eventually you're going to need to replace supply, especially for silver.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for. How do you think that the ESG movement plays into the future supply or lack thereof?
They want to do a lot more solar panels. I'm more for ESG. I'm more bullish on rare earths and some of the research and development that's going on.
Do you think that the ESG movement will get the gold miners in their crosshairs, so therefore less capital going into future production of all precious metals, and therefore we see a disruption in future supply, and therefore the cure for high prices are all of a sudden not high prices?
So I think the ESG for now is mostly just developed countries and Western countries, and China is in there because the Chinese Communist Party controls all the major, like World Bank, IMF, global health organizations. The emerging markets, a lot of their economies are still reliant on agriculture, commodities, and mining investments. So I think you'll see the emerging market governments balk at that. They don't want mining banned. Yeah. They want to tax mining more. And that's what you've seen with policies like out of Chile recently, where the Chilean government, their big cash cow in Chile is copper mining. So that they're like basically the Saudi Arabia of copper. Mm-hmm. However, what they've done with policy announcements is they've announced that they're going to put a sliding scale royalty. So let's say the copper price, right? I haven't looked at it this week on the copper price, but it was well over $4 a pound. That's a good copper price. Unless the costs to mine the copper, the costs start rising rapidly. But at $4, $4.50, $5 a pound copper, if you have a fairly low-cost copper mine, you're minting money, enormous free cash flow. Right. But if the Chilean government starts putting crazy royalty taxes on copper miners in Chile at those prices, and the way the sliding scale royalty would work, as I interpret it right now, is it say like $3.50 copper, $4 copper, $4.20, it keeps increasing. So there's a economic disincentive then if you're a copper miner, because the government's taking more and more. There's an economic disincentive then for copper miners in Chile to reinvest into their own businesses to find new copper supply in Chile. But the Chilean government needs the tax revenue. So you have these politicians and bureaucrats, they still want mining because they know it creates a lot of jobs. It creates investment, foreign direct investment into their economy, and they're paying tax bills. But they also want to take more tax revenue. So they might kill the golden goose there. So ESG, if they ban mining in Chile, that's a big source of their investment.
Yeah, I think the main takeaway there is we're bullish on the price, but you got to be very, very careful because you're playing with fire in the political environment we're dealing with today.
Well, this is why it's dangerous to just buy a couple individual mining stocks.
Right.
So if you're going to not do a lot of due diligence or pay for a newsletter, you should stick with the royalty and streaming companies because they don't mine. They can diversify quicker. If there's geopolitical problems, they can move their cash flow and their investments faster than a mining company can to other countries.
Yeah.
And the other ways to play gold and silver, I like Sprott Inc. You also have a uranium play there too because they own the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust. So they own all those metals trusts. They own the different gold and silver trusts, the platinum and palladium trust. They own the physical uranium trust, and they're paying a dividend. So they just they have different parts of their business where they run gold funds and they have oil and energy funds, and then they manage the trust, and they're not mining. They're making investments into miners and they're paying a dividend, but they're not actually doing the mining. So I try to stay away for the most part. My personal portfolio, I don't own a lot of companies that actually do mining anymore. For full disclosure, the only actual mining company I own right now is Alexco. That's like my out of the money call option on silver, because from a geopolitical standpoint, they're going to increase their silver production. They're in Canada, Mexico. There are some really good silver projects in Mexico, like Mag Silver and Silver Crest. Those are great mines. But if the geopolitical problems in Mexico are going to continue, I mean, Mexico is going to be too big a risk. Look what happened with First Majestic Silver. They just basically moved out of Mexico.
Yeah. All right, Caleb, does that answer your question, buddy?
It does. Thank you. There's a lot there, but I appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah. Sorry it was long-winded, but unfortunately, it's a fluid situation right now with the biggest risk for mining because the mining companies can't move their assets quickly.
Yeah, they're not exactly a digital marketer.
Yeah. Well, with a royalty and streaming company, they can make investments into other countries. So if one country becomes problematic, they can move faster. A mining company would have to do similar to what AngloGold Ashanti did years ago, where AngloGold Ashanti had basically all of their mines in South Africa, and they only had a couple mines outside of that country. And then they decided that they had to move all of their assets. They had to sell their assets in South Africa and move out of the country.
Which they're going to have to do at a fire sell price, by the way. They're going to be a motivated seller, and the buyers are going to know that.
Yes.
And
yes,
they're going to get pennies on the dollar. That's what you don't want to be as a motivated seller. Yeah.
Well, but now though, in the gold mining space, it's a buyer's market because as we discussed earlier in the call, there is not a lot of equity capital available for regular gold miners like there was 12 months ago. So when gold prices were rising, when gold prices were at $1,900, $2,000, $2,100, and a little bit above that in August and September of 2020, it was a lot easier to raise capital. You're a junior mining company, you could easily raise 5, 10 million, maybe even 20 or 30 for a drilling program.
Okay.
But not enough to go and build a lot of gold mines. And now the cost to build those gold mines, George, because all the materials costs, labor costs, energy costs, the cost to build a lot of these new gold mines is up between, I've seen estimates, 25 to 60% to build
since,
a new gold mine.
Since 2000, since the beginning of 2000?
No. Not 2000. The cost is up 25 to 60%.
2020. I meant 2020.
Just in the last 20 months, the cost is up that much.
I meant the beginning of 2020. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So it is way cheaper for a producing gold miner like Agnico Eagle to go and buy a producing gold miner that has discounted valuations and the management teams at some of these small junior miners or smaller producing miners, the junior miners that might not be producing that have a good project. Those management teams are fed up. They want out.
Yeah.
They might not say that publicly, but that's what I've heard. I mean, what small junior mining companies say publicly and privately, a lot of the cases, they say a lot of partial truths, and what they say publicly and privately are normally two different things. Unfortunately, I've had to deal with this now for almost 15 years.
Caller, what is your name?
Hi, I'm Carlo.
Hi, Carlo. You're on with Jason Burek.
I have a lot of gold miners, and some of the pundits that we all know, like Jeff Schneider, Lacey Hunt, Steve Van Meter, they're calling for deflation. So how do the gold miners do during times of deflation?
It depends what period of deflation you look at. So if you look at the U.S. deflation during the 1929 Great Depression, when FDR was trying to devalue against the gold price and the price of everything else was falling, the gold miners like Homestake Mining and Dome Mining had record profit margins back then and were minting money. They were some of the best performing stocks on the U.S. stock exchanges. In other periods of deflation, it was not necessarily the case. So you had FDR devalue the dollar against gold. He revalued the dollar after trying everything else and increased doubling the U.S.'s debt in a short amount of time. So it really depends. In terms of my views on deflation, though, the way the system is designed, deflation can only last for short periods of time without the whole system collapsing. So they will change the rules. They will move the goalposts. They will do covert bailouts. They will print trillions and not tell anyone. They've done this. They did this in 2008, 2009. I've talked about this, George, on your interviews in the past with the one-time partial audit that Ron Paul got and also the Levy Institute, the $29 trillion. So they will do, and the Fed can do special purpose vehicles now. That's legal. Since March of 2020, Jim Bianco wrote about this in Bloomberg.
Yeah, we're talking to Jim tomorrow.
So any deflation, there can be deflation, but the way the system is designed, Kyle Bass didn't agree with me when I interviewed him a couple weeks ago. He didn't agree that this whole system is a debt and credit Ponzi scheme. But the way the system is designed, it's a debt and credit Ponzi scheme, in my opinion, with government debt and corporate debt now. The amount of corporate debt since like 2009 has doubled. If they allow defaults on corporate debt, they might allow some defaults. If they allow all these defaults, I mean, so many people are going to lose their jobs. Corporations are not going to pay taxes. It would be an enormous, the Fed would have to print even more then. The system is designed.
I think that people really have to, they just don't understand what Jeff is saying, because he uses terminology and he assumes that you know what he's talking about based on the context. And it's very difficult for people to follow because they're not in that world and they don't speak that language. It's not that they're not intellectually capable of following what he's saying. It's just, it's a completely different language. So what I would strongly encourage the last viewer to do, along with everyone on the live stream here, is when you hear Dr. Lacey Hunt or Jeff talk about deflation, try to replace that word with the phrase lower economic activity or lower economic output. And try to think that one through, because I don't think anyone would disagree that the future for the United States, based on the structural flaws in our economy, is for economic output to decrease. That's what Jeff is saying. Then once you come to that conclusion or your probability set there, then you go ahead and say, okay, well, this decrease in economic activity, will this lead to stock prices going down in nominal terms, real estate going down, bonds going up, or will it lead to consumer, the stuff that I buy at the grocery store, will it lead to those prices going up? But you've got to first think through, okay, decrease in economic activity. What people do is they skip ahead to the prices, and that doesn't tell you the full story. And it doesn't really accurately depict, in my opinion, Jeff or Dr. Lacey's view.
Well, the other part of this is asset price. The way that the U.S. government finances are at all levels. So it's the federal government, the state and local governments. They want to tax asset prices more. Let's just be honest. They're looking for new ways to increase taxes on asset prices and businesses.
Yeah, that's right. Because that's where they're going to get the majority of the income, regardless of what the income tax rate is.
Yeah. So Stagflate Tax Live, one of my listeners who's heard this a lot, he said it sounds a lot like steel. And that's basically what it is. So the way I look at inflation and deflation is you have hyperinflation on, I look at it as a gauge. So you have hyperinflation on one side, that's an extreme. You have super bad deflation where they actually allow like wide-scale bankruptcies, wide-scale defaults. There's not a lot of money, currency and credit creation that has contracted. That's on the other side of the gauge. That's the other extreme. And everything else in between that is different degrees of stagflation.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily believe that even in that deflationary environment you talked about, which is a debt deleveraging, I don't know that we have grocery store prices go down in that
environment.
I agree.
The problems are on the supply side.
There you go.
So you have problems on that. So not only are the governments creating more currency and credit, which they've created a lot of over the last 20 months, but you also have supply side problems now too.
Yeah. And that's what I've been talking to Jeff and Lynn about with the 1940s. Using the 1940s as maybe a better guide for the 2020s than the 1970s.
Deflation was allowed they did lots of bailouts and rules changes and manipulations in 2008, 2009, but asset price deflation and deflation was about 6 to 8 months back then. And in February and March of 2020, it was 6 to 8 weeks. So, we have to look at things in perspective here. So yes, we can have deflation, but in a fiat currency and credit system, how long are they, where the politicians and the bureaucrats and the central banksters are allowed to change the rules as many times as they want. And Wall Street doesn't care as long as they have more higher asset prices. I mean, the new tax scheme now, cryptocurrency, if Bitcoin and cryptocurrency are in a, they've had a correction recently. But I mean, if Bitcoin goes to $1 million or $2 million, how much in extra tax revenue is the U.S. federal government going to collect? I mean, that's tens of billions more per year in tax revenue that the U.S. federal government didn't have to invest a cent in.
Yeah.
Unless they hire more IRS agents.
See, that's the problem with one of the many problems with the economy being more financialized.
Yep.
Is the tax revenue is far more dependent upon asset bubbles than actually productivity.
Well, you and me are the only ones talking about the property tax scam. I've tried explaining this to other people, the video that you made.
Okay, so Jason, I think we've got one more caller.
Sure.
Sir, what is your name?
Ryan.
Ryan, thanks for calling in, buddy. You're on with Jason Burek.
Hey guys, Jason. I actually follow you on Patreon. I really love your the posts you make and stuff. It really gives some in-depth like macro to like the whole mining space, whether it comes to like uranium, gold, silver, all that stuff. So
I really appreciate that. Oh, thank you.
And then, so I wanted to ask, what is your opinion and thoughts on like platinum versus gold and the ratio going on right there? And then if I haven't looked into it very much, and I just actually kind of thought about it, but royalty companies in like the platinum sector, and if you or know of any off the top of your head.
So I don't think there's a pure play for platinum and palladium, but some of the larger ones own like small slices of it. I think Wheaton Precious Metals has a small one. Okay. I think they have like a small platinum palladium. They also got a cobalt stream from Sibania. So, I mean, some of these larger royalty and streaming companies, if the economics are good, they'll buy a base metal stream. They'll buy a cobalt stream. They'll add it into the portfolio mix. The platinum and palladium, I think Altius Minerals has a sizable, because the Altius Minerals is a royalty and streaming company, but they tend to focus on base metals, on potash and coal. So I don't think they have uranium exposure. There is an Amir Anani has attempted to do a uranium royalty company, but I don't think they have any cash flow yet. But in theory, it is a good idea if some of his investments, some of the mines there on with the uranium royalties can actually get a permit to mine. That's the problem right now with the uranium industry is they can't, in a lot of developed countries, it is a real pain in the ass to get permits done, especially here in the U.S., with all the different government and regulatory agencies to get a uranium mining permit, unless you already have one from a long time ago and you just got it renewed. It's a pain in the ass to get a new one, takes years, takes millions of dollars, many millions of dollars. And it's an even larger pain in the ass to build nuclear, even one nuclear power plant here in the US. So for platinum and palladium, you also asked about the ratio. I'm not an expert on that, but I can tell you that smart Chinese buyers have started to also buy more silver and also buy more platinum. So you're going to see demand pressure on that. And platinum and palladium are byproducts similar to silver. So they normally only occur with like base metals or gold in a geology deposit. So they're byproducts. So you're not going to see a primary platinum and palladium deposit. It's going to be a byproduct. So there could also be supply side concerns. The industrial demand component is kind of the tricky part, because platinum and palladium, depending upon price, that's the car manufacturers, electric vehicles don't have, I don't think they have smog, so they don't have catalytic converters. They don't do the same type of catalytic converters. But for the gas and diesel power, they have catalytic converters, and those auto manufacturers will switch. It's price sensitive. So if palladium goes up too much and there's more supply available of platinum, then the automakers for their catalytic converters will switch from palladium to platinum. They will switch on whichever one has more supply and is not rising rapidly in price. So that could hurt the demand side. So what I would tell you then is most of the successful platinum and palladium people that I know just do trades. So they don't buy and hold, because the auto manufacturers can kill your trade. One of the biggest palladium spikes was when Ford panic bought a ton of palladium in the market, and that drove the price up a lot, but then the price eventually crashed. So it's not really a buy and hold type of thing. It's more of a set up a swing trade. If you recognize that there's a supply problem in one, auto manufacturers are going to start to buy that one instead. You get your big price move, and then you take profits off the table, and then maybe you rotate profits out of the other one. You know which metals trader actually does a good job of that? They're not paying me or anything, is the McIlvaney. So the McIlvaney, they trade metals, McIlvaney ICA, McIlvaney, and they actually do ratio trading in your investor IRA, investor's retirement account. So they have precious metals IRA for trading on the ratio. So you might want to talk to them.
Yeah. Have you heard of, because you mentioned him, that person, have you heard of Stephen Penny and the Silver Charter support? Silver Chartist?
Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. I don't know him specifically.
Okay, because he kind of does the same thing sometimes, and I'm actually subscribed to his like premium service. And he talks, that's why I asked you, wanted to ask you about the platinum versus gold ratio. And then he sometimes talks about like swing trading ideas like that with the like platinum, palladium miners, stuff like that.
The people who have made the most money do like swing trading for platinum and palladium and playing the ratio. But the problem is if you're doing a lot of trading, you're going to get taxed at a very high rate. And I think McIlvaney inside of your IRA with a precious metals IRA, self-directed IRA, they figured out a way where you get your gains in metal tax-free until the end. So I would, I think that's like the most tax efficient way to do that if you're looking.
Okay,
cool. And collect ounces.
All right, caller. We appreciate the call, my friend.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, Jason, fantastic conversation, buddy. Can you go ahead and give out your Patreon one more time?
Let me just talk one more about one more stock pick here. So okay. I think like the safest way right now to get gold and silver exposure rather than buying individual mining stocks is with like a royalty and streaming companies ETF. The best one that I've seen so far, there's other good gold mining ETFs that I like ahead of like GDX and GDXJ, like the Sprott Gold Miners ETF, which is SGDM, and then the Sprott Gold Miners Juniors ETF, which is SGDJ. But the royalty and streaming company ETF, which has like 5%, 4 or 5% Franco-Nevada, it might be a little higher than that, Wheaton Precious Metals, Royal Gold, Sandstorm Gold, like the other royalty and streaming companies in there. That's the GOAU, G-O, and then the periodic table of elements gold symbol.
Okay.
So like on dips, you could accumulate that. If you don't want to go and pick out individual companies, that ETF has a basket of the royalty and streaming companies, and those companies are already diversified. So you're diversification on top of diversification there.
Yeah, okay. That's a fantastic.
So you're getting, yes. Yeah. So you're getting exposure to companies with higher profit margins, and the profit margins in this environment where metals prices are not rallying yet and costs are going up, the mining companies, the next couple quarters are not going to be good for the mining companies. Now, if you're in a dividend paying company, you're going to get paid to wait. But overall, like the quarters are going to disappoint because the costs are rising and the metals price is not up. So the profit margins are not going to be good. With a royalty and streaming company, you don't have to worry about that. Companies like Sandstorm Gold, which is a mid-tier royalty and streaming company, their profit margins are $1,500 an ounce for every ounce that they get from their royalties and streams.
That's
more than double the profit margins for a regular gold mining company.
Yeah, I mean, that's more than GameStop or AMC or WeWork.
yeah, but the short squeeze, you're not going to bust a hedge fund. You're not going to bust a hedge fund though, George. You're not going to stick it to the Wall Street banksters. You're not going to stick it to the banksters.
All right, man, go ahead and give out your Patreon. We got to get you some more subscribers, buddy, because the value you give, you should be getting paid 10 times that. I think everyone on this live stream would agree with me there. So what's the Patreon?
It's just patreon.com/WallStreetForMainStreet, WALLSTFORMEINST. And my YouTube channel has almost 2,000 free videos. I've interviewed a lot of experts. I have short videos on there. I did live stream shows. Yep. In just the last couple weeks, that took me a lot of work to get. That took me over a year of emails, direct messages, mutual friends to help me get the interview booked. It took a lot of work.
Yeah, that was huge. I really enjoyed that interview myself. So, all right, buddy, we'll leave it there. Enjoy the rest of your day. And we're going to get you back on here in a few weeks to talk more gold, precious metals, commodities, uranium.
Yep. I'm already booked, I think, to come on your regular YouTube channel for an interview. I think December 20th, I think. So I think like in 2 weeks, exactly 2 weeks for a regular interview.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon. For the viewers, make sure you enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Always stand up for freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism.